Father Kelly here, trying to convince myself that I am in fact not old and broken, even though my body is trying to tell me that I am. I had one of those mysterious, I hear, old man injuries where it just kind of turns out that way. I've heard my friends complain about this, like, oh yeah, this is hurting, that's hurting, and I just, you know, I didn't do anything just because I'm getting old. And I thought, nah, that's never going to happen to me. Well, crap, now I have one, because I guess just from being sedentary and lots of planes and cars the last couple weeks, you know, usually I walk about 10 to 12 miles a week, and I don't mean like, you know, pedometer steps around the office, but like literally to campus and back, praying a rosary, other places, I do a pretty good amount of walking. But I hadn't done hardly any of that. Again, mostly, you know, traveling somewhere, a couple hours in the car, sitting in airports. Really, my only walking was between terminals in the airport. And I didn't even do anything particular. I just bent down to pick something up one day, and there's a stabbing pain in my heel for seemingly no reason. And it only happens at like one particular angle, one particular way, but still, it definitely hurts, and I can't even figure out what the heck it might be from. I looked it up, I found out what tendon it is that's doing the stinging, and it says, oh yes, might be caused by, you know, sports injury or this kind of... I didn't do any of that stuff. It just hurts for no freaking reason. And the only thing I can think of is that it's actually injured because I was not doing anything. Because I was sitting around so much, maybe I turned one weird way and didn't even notice it at the time. But it really feels connected to that sedentary way I was being, contrary to my normal pretty good level of activity. And I thought, well, isn't that a metaphor for spiritual life? If we sit around too much and aren't active, aren't actually even challenging ourselves in the spiritual life, we get, you might say, easily injured, unable to cope when bad things happen. We might think that, oh, you know, I pray, you know, I say grace before meals, or I do this or that one little thing. But if we don't take seriously and regularly our spiritual life, and, you know, go to Mass every Sunday and other times if we can, and pray a rosary and all that kind of stuff, there's many things you could be doing, but we need to have some active, intentional, regular, reoccurring daily prayer life. If we don't, we get dragged down even by what really should be small things. I've talked to so many people that they get sidelined and just derailed by something that really, if they were praying regularly, honestly wouldn't be that big of a deal. You know, the analogy works so very well. When we are weak and sedentary and slow in prayer life, then even when not that big of challenges come along, we just get totally broken and like, oh, you know, I'm crippled and then I can't do anything, and then we're hobbling along for a long time. Maybe we get out of it eventually, but again, I've seen so many people who really didn't have a good excuse for being so affected by something bad that happened. Because if they were living a Christian life properly, joyfully, daily, it would have been, you know, not a happy thing that happened, but it's something that they could have moved on from, relied on God's grace, and it wouldn't have been a big deal. But because they were unexercised in the spiritual life, unprepared, it became a massive burden and a great injury, you might say. Now, in all that travel I've been doing, my own prayer life has been really good, and I can attest actually to the opposite I was just talking about, not saying, oh my gosh, I pray so much, but I can really tell that the prayer that I do is incredibly helpful. Like, I can recognize specifically that with the amount of travel I was doing, the amount of still plenty of pastoral stress and burden and, you know, just regular stuff going on, meetings at a distance, email, making decisions, kind of navigating parish life, even if I wasn't actually there. With a great amount of that kind of stuff going on still, I had every reason to be just absolutely bowled over with exhaustion. And I mean, there's been times in the past, because I know what's possible, that I would have just felt literally sick from stress and tiredness and just having to make so many decisions so often. It just weighs on you. And I've been there before, where I was absolutely just like, it's a being sick from exhaustion, that just sort of inner gross semi kind of nauseous feeling. I've had just so much of that in the past, and I know what that's like, but I didn't have it this time. And I really could recognize that the devotions that I've developed over time lately, the last couple of years, of making sure no matter where I am, what's going on first thing in the morning, getting somewhere at least quiet, if not a chapel, reading the Bible, reading the catechism, praying the liturgy of the hours, praying my private intentions, and beginning the day that way, making sure rosary happens, making sure mass happens at some point during the day. And you know, holy hour, especially if I can find a really good place for that. Keeping up with all those things and not giving into them and saying, oh, well, I'm traveling, it's not going to happen, I guess. Keeping up with those makes just such a massive difference. And I can genuinely recognize that my life is better. I'm able to bear the burden of pastoral life so much better because of it. One of the places where all that travel has been to was quite a fun trip, to go down to the Big 12 championship game and watch Oklahoma State, get bowled over by Texas. I mean, how that game actually went is not really the point of what I'm talking about today. But being present to that game and trying to enjoy it and just, I'm interested in college sports in general, that made me really pay attention to the college football playoff that came out. You know, Texas beat Oklahoma State, so I thought, you know what? They're going to be in, and turns out that they are. But I was watching that, and I kind of looked back and went, because I heard that, the predictions guessed that it would be Michigan, Washington, Texas, and Florida State. And I thought to myself, oh, wow, we're going to not have an SEC team in here. That's going to be so cool. Like, I really hope that happens. Just because from someone not part of the SEC and not all on board with that and not just, you know, loving him and worshiping like everyone else seems to, that was going to be a nice, refreshing thing to have those people who freaking win all the time, everything, be left out. They've had plenty of things to celebrate, so I don't feel bad for them at all. And then I was stunned, just like everybody else was, that Florida State, the undefeated ACC champions, got left out in favor of freaking Alabama getting put in there. And college sports world, unless you're an Alabama fan or SEC, I suppose, erupted with just disgust by that. Like, how could you possibly leave out Florida State, who has clearly a much better season, and based on intangible things, I mean, not entirely intangible, their quarterback was hurt, but something that's not supposed to be a criteria, and really what it comes down to, it sure seems like they just couldn't bear to have not an SEC team, not especially Alabama, in there. All of the criticisms that get hand-waved away that there's a certain group of college sports teams that are basically, air quotes, required to be in there, that they are so important and so self-important that it just can't be imagined that they don't get to be involved. And it was really looking like we were going to actually step past that kind of thing and be free from the insufferability of all that SEC nonsense, always insisting that they be worshipped, and then Alabama gets put in there, and it just really is disappointing as a sports fan. Now, if you look into it, we can understand the logic there. You can see, like, okay, like, well, they're thinking about this. All right, fine. But it's still a ridiculous conclusion. They should have recognized, they should have known what was going to happen here. They overthought it. They couldn't set aside, it seems, their own little interior preferences, the way things ought to be, and they really hung a dubious reason upon why they had to leave Florida State out and put, oh, conveniently, Alabama just has to go in there. I think their overthinking led them to a ridiculous conclusion. If they would have taken a moment to step back and actually look at the sports landscape, not their own preconceived, well, this is the way it, air quotes, ought to be, but really what the sports world is looking for, again, outside of those who are already too entitled for their own good, they would have seen that Florida State being in there with Michigan, Alabama, and Washington, and Texas would have been the right choice. But no, they had to respect what we get so tired of seeing. Now, that's only college sports, and that's not that important of a case of this in the broader scheme of things. But this thing isn't limited to this kind of idea of overlooking what is the actual proper situation, the actual proper response, because of preconceived overthinking, let's put it lightly, is a situation where, especially the University of Pennsylvania president, Liz McGill, has now had to resign because of the way she defended anti-Semitic activities on her campus. Now, is she right in a very basic sense that we can't clamp down on everything we disagree with on a college campus? Well, yeah, as a Catholic, as somebody whose opinion is often looked down upon in American culture, yeah, I respect that that's something that we have to stand up for. However, the things that were being called for by anti-Semitic groups, literally calling for genocide against Jews on her campus, the fact that she couldn't say, you know what, we support free speech, and that's important. However, this crosses a line, and that is inappropriate. We will not stand for that. She couldn't do it. She had to resign in what I presume is great embarrassment. But this is the kind of thing that we see to greater or lesser degrees in lots of places where folks get so entrenched in their own intellectualism, which certainly has a kind of arrogance and pride to it, that, well, yes, we have thought, like, we have doctorates and everything, and we are the wise philosopher intellectual types, and therefore this is the right thing to do, and this is the way it must be. But there's a certain value, too, in the ability of a rational adult, and rationality it doesn't, let me back up. There is a true kind of rationality, common sense if you want to call it that, that can look back and should look back at hyper-intellectualized sort of ivory tower of academia things and look back as a normal human being and say, you know what, there's something wrong with this. Because it happens all the time that, and to be completely clear, I am not degrading, this is not an anti-intellectual kind of thing that I'm saying. Learning is good, education is good, it's a beautiful thing. We should use our minds that God gave us. However, we should also use our conscience and our hearts that God gave us. Anytime academia or intellectualism becomes its own God, where it makes its own choices outside of anything else, it can, you know, because if you logic things out, just strict logic, you can actually get some strange places because you leave out the actual human element. I think that's what happened here. The intellectualism, the intelligentsia of these things that we must defend, that must be allowed on a college campus because of what it is, they allowed it to go somewhere very horrible, where she was standing up for the appropriateness of someone being able to say that we should commit genocide against a certain group of people. That is massively inappropriate, and I'm not on the, someone must step down or get fired or resign. I would actually love to have seen her, if you will, repent and move forward and be a better president because of it. But the situation where someone, some group, like be it the CFP, College Football Playoff Committee, or this Ivy League president, and I think others did it too, where the brains get together and they fail to step back and look outside of their own self-reflecting, self-affirming boxes and say, you know what, is this in the broader scope? Is this really correct, or are we in our own little echo chamber not recognizing what the thing is? Sad cases. Football one is frustrating and anger-producing from a sports fan perspective. The defense of anti-Semitism in a very vicious way that was done by those Ivy League universities, that's much more concerning from a human culture standpoint, because we, yes, free speech is a real thing, but also threats of violence and that level of it, a reasonable human being would have recognized that that's not the way it should have been. However, lest we become too proud and just point fingers, very often in the church we do a similar thing, where we get entrenched in our own way of doing things and fail to recognize that we are not doing what keeps the next generation, what attracts the next generation to be faithful Catholic Christians especially. We get in our own comfort zones where we like things just the way they are, and Father, you can't change anything or else I'll be offended. And guess what? People come to our churches and they look around and go, oh, it's 1984, 1986 in here, 1987, 1973. You know, I think I'm going to go somewhere else. Now, there are good things that came from many time periods of the church. It's not about the time period, but it's about, does it preach the gospel? Very often, we get in any institution this happens, where we bring in things or begin to do things at a certain time period, and we really like them a whole lot, and they really make us feel great to do them that way. But is that the way that needs to be done to evangelize, or is that just what makes us comfortable and happy in the moment? So even too in the church, we have the same problem where if we would step back and look at it and say, okay, the things that we are doing, are they fulfilling our purpose to bring everyone into the house of the Lord? Or are they fulfilling the purpose of making us really proud of what we do in our house of the Lord? Are we content with the way things are, and I hope they stay that way forever? Or are we do we have discontent, and think we should, in fact, to say, you know what, let's always be asking the question, is what we are doing the thing that is needed to reach out and bring people to the gospel of Jesus Christ? It's so easy for us to become sedentary, to become, you might even say, injured by being sedentary in the church, and go on for 20, 30, 40 years and look around and go, wait, where'd everyone go? Why is no one here? Where'd all the young families go? Why does no one want to join our CIA? Well, are we living our vocation as evangelizing Christians, or are we living in comfort and safety and security, being content with our own way of doing things and our own long-lasting preferences? So no portion of human nature is immune from this question of being injured by being sedentary, by failing to be aware of what's going on. We're not immune in any case from overthinking it and being in our own little echo chambers, when really we should step back and have a broader view of the whole situation and think of, does this really actually make sense? Are we really doing what needs to be done? The way we keep on top of that and don't get into our own little echo chambers, our own little narcissisms even, you might call it, is to be good people of prayer, to keep the Lord and his words and the faith and his grace ever present and before our lives. And then God will draw us out of our own narrow-mindedness. He will draw us out of our own narcissism, of our own comfort zone. He will draw us out. He'll keep us from being lazy and help us to be active and moving and growing and faithful. And then the church will grow, people will come to salvation, and, in fact, we will be happier as well. Because whenever we do get outside of ourselves, whenever we get engaged with the other and engaged with the Lord, it's then that we find true happiness. So, don't become sedentary, don't become locked into comfort zones. Get up, get out, pray, be holy people of God. And that will help us do everything that we need to be doing.